Our next case this morning is the State of Minnesota versus Gill and Midwest Bonding.
How are you?
Good morning.
Good morning.
How you doing? Good morning.
Good morning. As there is no respondent, you will have counsel 15 minutes in total for your argument. So whenever you're ready, just approach the microphone and please tell us who you are in a loud voice. Thank you. You're welcome.
May it please the court. Good morning. My name is Jim McGeaney. I'm the attorney for the appellant in this matter, Midwest Bonding, LLC, regarding the denial of a petition to reinstate and discharge a bail bond in the State of Minnesota versus Clarence Joseph Gill matter in the Hennepin County District Court. I do note, as Your Honor did, that there's no appearance by the respondent, and the record reflects that the respondent did not participate in the underlying petition in this matter. They did not object to the petition to reinstate and discharge the bond, as was their opportunity. I want to point out at first a typo in my brief. Maybe you noticed it. Didn't mean to mislead the court. I think I'm correct in my factual, excuse me, my statement of the facts, but on page 6 of my brief, in my argument regarding the first Schatzky factors, I say the defendant was only absent for 5.5 days. That's incorrect. I think the record reflects it was 5.5 months. I just want to point that out to the court right away.
I was going to ask you about that because you assert that the fugitive recovery agent assisted in recovering Mr. Gill.
Correct.
But it says that the agent was notified that defendant was back in the custody of the sheriff having been arrested in Bloomington, Minnesota.
I think that's another typo that we didn't have an opportunity to address because we were denied a hearing by the district court judge. But the agent assisted the recovery of the defendant in the Mall of America, and that's reflected in the record. It was a document that was filed with the petition. It's addendum number 7, which is the verification of surrender that the jail gives a fugitive recovery agent when they participate in the assistance on the recovery of a fugitive. And the deputy in the Hennepin County Jail verified that Midwest Bonding's fugitive recovery agent assisted and was present when Mr. Gill was booked into the jail. But again, we didn't have an opportunity to address
where does it say that?
On verification of surrender in custody, Your Honor.
So I'm looking at addendum 7. Okay, so defendant.
And then bail enforcement?
Yep.
Guardian fugitive recovery with authority to locate and apprehend empowered by Midwest Bonding on this day surrendered or verified custody status of the above defendant. And so these are the documents that the jail gives a fugitive recovery agent if he's present when the defendant is surrendered into the jail.
Well, what I'm looking for is someone saying, yeah, they helped. Where does it say, yeah, they helped?
Well, it's implied in the fact that it says that the fugitive recovery agent was present when the defendant was surrendered in the center of the document in the title bail enforcement verification.
How do we know it's not verified custody status?
We weren't able to make that record, Your Honor, to do that in the district court. I don't know that that's a key fact anyway. I think whether or not
Midwest... That's the only one you've got. So,
well, I mean, appreciate
if that's all you've got to show, I mean, I guess what I'm sort of looking for, like, you know, like on TV when the guys have a gun and have bail agent and, you know, they get him out of the car, I'm sort of looking like that. If this guy sort of was just shopping at the Mega Mall when the police arrested this guy, I don't see, you know, I mean... Is there anything in the record like during these whole 5.5 months he was like with NCI, you know, investigating and calling up his sister and you know, going on like Tommy Lee Jones and The Fugitive and running around. I don't see any of that.
No, Your Honor. The record, the only document in the record was that the fugitive recovery agent made efforts to locate the defendant, investigating contact information, software, and those kinds of things that are standard.
Well, you know, it seems like that's what that's what annoyed Judge Quaintance. I mean, she was looking for sort of more than just, you know, I made a phone call, and, you know.
It may be. Again, we didn't have an opportunity to have a hearing and make a record before the district court. We were denied our request for a hearing, but I appreciate that.
I mean, you filed an affidavit, so presumably in that affidavit you could have, in exhaustive detail, said the million things that your bonding recovery agent was doing to try to get the get Mr. Gill back in custody.
We could have, but we didn't. Yes, I agree.
And again, we review this on abuse of discretion?
Correct.
So you want to explain to me how the district court abused its discretion?
Yes, I would. The district court analyzed the four Chesky factors in its order. It conceded that there's no prejudice to the state in its order. The district court, where it erred or where it misapplied the law, which would be abuse of discretion, in finding in the first Chesky factors where the district court says that the purpose of bail was not satisfied and that that factor weighs against reinstatement, basically analyzing really the second factor, what the district court found was that Mr. Gill's abuse of his procurement of bail to delay the court proceedings for several months belies the intended purpose in Chesky. But as the Minnesota Supreme Court has held in State v. Askland, when a defendant is not appeared for sentencing, and when a defendant hasn't appeared for 7 months, was returned to custody, pleaded guilty, and sentenced, that the purpose of bail has been satisfied. The facts here are almost exactly the same as Askland, except for Mr. Gill was absent for less than 7 months. He was absent for 5.5 months. He was apprehended, pleaded guilty, and was sentenced shortly after his apprehension. So the Minnesota Supreme Court held in Askland that the purpose of bail be satisfied. Here, when Mr. Gill was absent for a less period of time from the custody of the court, the purpose of bail has been satisfied. So the district court erred in its finding that the purpose of bail not be satisfied, and that factor weighed against reinstatement.
I read Askland, the Supreme Court focused on the district court's focus or reliance on the fourth factor, the prejudice to the state, in its determination.
It did as well.
It seemed to be the hinge for the way that the court looked at, the Supreme Court looked at that case.
As courts do in every bail case, they look at the specific facts of each case. But the Supreme Court did make a finding, and the holding in Askland was that the purpose of bail was satisfied under those facts. And applying these facts to Askland, the Supreme Court...
Their analysis, the Supreme Court's analysis, was that the district court erred in its prejudice to the state, the kind of weight that it gave to that.
It did, yes. I just point out, though, that that was the analysis, that was their holding in Askland regarding the purpose of bail. And so we believe that the district court's analysis in the purpose of bail here is incorrect because the defendant was back in custody within 5.5 months, pleaded guilty, and sentenced, that the purpose of bail here, applying the analysis from Askland, has been satisfied.
The syllabus by the court is, in considering a petition for reinstatement and discharge of a bail bond, the prejudice to the state prong of the Chesky factors relates to the adverse effect, if any, the defendant's absence has on state's prosecution of the defendant.
That was the focus of that litigation in Askland,
well,
yes.
That's the syllabus by the court, which is typically what I look to for their holding.
The site in Askland is at page 61, where they discuss the fact that the 7 month absent didn't negate the purpose of bail.
Mm-hmm.
We also argue that the district court abused its discretion in the second Chesky factor, and that's what I think we were discussing off the bat about the good faith efforts of the surety as measured by the willfulness of the defendant. And in this case, the district court says there's no mitigating factors regarding Gill's absconding, and that's really not part of the Shetsky test. The Shetsky, or none of the cases since Shetsky, have talked about mitigating factors regarding a defendant's absence from the court. In the majority of bail bond cases, when a defendant absconds or when a defendant doesn't appear for a hearing, it's because it's willful. It's very rare that it happens, and those cases don't usually make it up to the appellate level because a district court will recognize there's a good basis for a defendant not appearing for his hearing. For instance, in custody of another jurisdiction or some other inability to appear. But what the district court failed to do was consider that Midwest good faith efforts are to be measured against the willfulness. And Storkamp is the case that discusses that. In Storkamp, the Supreme Court reversed a holding when the lower courts basically said, look, the defendant's absence from the jurisdiction was willful, so that factor weighs against reinstatement. And the Supreme Court said, that's not what we meant. The Shetsky Court never meant that just because a defendant's absence is willful, that automatically makes that factor weigh against reinstatement, and that a defendant's good faith, an appellant's surety's good faith efforts should be considered. The district court didn't consider appellant's good faith efforts.
Isn't that the third Shetsky factor?
Well, the third Shetsky factor is basically, what good faith efforts did you make? The second factor is, what were the good faith efforts as measured by the willfulness of the defendant's absence? They kind of interrelated, Your Honor. I'm not sure why they have separate factors, but you know, these factors tests get made out by the appellate courts, and that's the test. The test is four factors, and the second and third factors are interrelated. Interestingly, the district court acknowledges that appellant made good faith efforts to apprehend Mr. Gill. But instead of finding that factor was favored reinstatement and discharge, it finds that factor is neutral. And
because it found that the efforts were unsuccessful.
Well, actually, I think what the district court said was they're neutral, and I wanted to discuss briefly with this court about its reliance on Rodriguez. It says that the efforts were not extraordinary, and it relied on State versus Rodriguez, a 2009 case from this court. And that's not really the holding from Rodriguez. If you read Rodriguez, the issue in the Rodriguez case was that the surety didn't identify the defendant correctly, and they learned after the defendant failed to appear that it was a different person, that the person in the courtroom had misrepresented who they were and given false information to the district court and false information to the bail bond company. And the bail bond company then was arguing that they should be let off the bond because of a contract case. They were saying the contract should be void because the defendant misrepresented who he was. And oh, by the way, we went and looked for him as well. And the Rodriguez court, the holding is not about extraordinary efforts. It's a one-line sentence in the case where the court in Rodriguez said, this court said, you know, yeah, you went down and tried to find Mr. Rodriguez, who you thought was Mr. Rodriguez, and, you know, because you didn't properly identify Mr. Rodriguez when you entered into this bond contract, we don't think that's an extraordinary measure. You didn't go to extraordinary measures because you didn't even know who you were looking for. That case does not stand for the proposition that the district court says it does, that a surety's efforts to locate and apprehend a defendant applying the third Shetsky factor need to be somehow extraordinary. It's not the holding from the case, and I would argue to this court that that's not the test. That the efforts don't have to be extraordinary; they have to be good faith. And I think the record's clear here that appellant made good faith efforts. And not only did appellant make good faith efforts to ensure that the defendant appeared for his hearing, they made good faith efforts to locate him. But they also made good faith efforts to make sure that he appeared at his hearing.
But
so
in the Rodriguez case, our court deferred to the discretion of the district court and upheld the denial to reinstate bond.
Under those facts, yes, a panel from this court did uphold the district court. But again, these cases are fact specific, and the facts from Rodriguez, I don't think Rodriguez was ever found. So. Of course, they upheld the denial because Mr. Rodriguez was never brought back before the jurisdiction of the court. He's still at large, maybe today. Where here, Mr. Gill was found, was returned, arguably with the help of Midwest Bonding. And even if you find that that is not enough to show Midwest took a, assisted in actually bringing Mr. Gill to the Hennepin County Jail, I don't know that that's required. Again, I don't think the efforts need to be extraordinary. They need to be made in good faith, and it's clear, and it's uncontested, by the way. The respondent does not contest any of the facts or arguments we're making here this morning. So, just for the record, that there's nothing in the record to say that the efforts were not in good faith. So, to answer this court's question, I think the third factor is, were the efforts made in good faith? And applying that to the second factor,
the burden on reinstatement, is it you?
In the district court?
Yes.
Yes. Are there any other questions? But we're respectfully asking this court to reverse the district court order that the bond be reinstated and discharged. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. The matter is submitted.